Good morning, everyone, and happy Mother's Day. I'm so glad you all chose to be here with us today. This couldn't be really a more perfect reading for Mother's Day because at its core, it really speaks to male and female qualities. There was Mary sitting with devotion, with self-offering, really absorbing not just Jesus' words, of course, but his energy. And there was Martha in the kitchen solving the problem and getting things done. There was a little joke that got sent around for many of us. I don't know how many of you read it a few weeks ago, but it reminded me of this reading right away, and then lo and behold, I was going to be giving the sermon. So there's a programmer whose wife asks him to go out to this store, and she says to him as he's going out, "Could you get a loaf of bread and check and see if they have eggs? And if they do, get a dozen." So the programmer comes home a little while, and he has in his hands a dozen loaves of bread, and he said, "They had eggs." It was very funny to me, just how male, and of course it was a programmer. I loved that part of the joke. Anyway. This reading is really compelling in all of our lives because it's not as if we can't very easily imagine the dilemma that Martha was facing. I was realizing last night, she wasn't just making dinner. I can certainly get into that, what it means to have to get the dinner on the table. She was cooking for Jesus. I mean, there she was cooking, in essence, for the Lord. And it would have felt pretty important to her that everything be exactly right. So, as Swami Kriyananda says in the reading, it's not that we can't understand the dilemma and that we all face it. We don't just face it because there's a lot to do in life, which of course there is. We face it because that dilemma is so subtle. It can get us over and over and over again. How many things there are to accomplish in life? How many things there are to organize? How many things we have to get really just right decisions to make? And in the moment, how important it all feels. It's not that we're standing back right away with this teaching in our head. At the time it presents itself to us, it really feels meaningful to get it just right, whatever it is. It's part of how Maya tugs on us. And then we feel responsible for a lot of things. I was just having a discussion with a friend of mine about how easily that happens to us. Many of you know for a long time, I had a lot to do with getting a lot of the meals on the table here at Ananda for a lot of the holidays. It's a pretty big job. We were often cooking for between 100 and 120 people. And I found it impossible to not feel responsible for that meal such that it became very easy to worry about how the size of the vegetables as they were chopped, who was doing what, the timeliness of it. Again, it's Maya. So it's not that we can't understand the dilemma here. It's a very powerful story in that regard, because in order to really get the meaning of what Jesus was saying to Martha and what Swamiji is trying to explain to us, we really have to change our consciousness completely. We have to leave all of the ways that we've been trained, the whole system of rewards that's there for us doing these jobs well, which is really how we've all grown up. You choose the right school. You do the job right. You clean up your room when you're little. All of those things that we do, the better we do them, the bigger the reward. That's how we're trained to think. So how is that different for us? What happens to us on this path? We, of course, have all been, we're all drawn here. Everybody's drawn here because of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, who we call Master. So Master came in with what he called a new dispensation. And what was that new dispensation? He went back to the to what he called original Christianity. He went back to those really pristine teachings that we know about through so many of the saints. Not saints who were self-realizationists as we are, but saints, Catholic saints, really some of the most well-known, holiest, now Protestant teachers. Master came in to tell us, you can have inner communion with God. Every one of you. In fact, that is what this life is about. That's certainly what being on a spiritual path is about. Attaining inner communion with the Lord. That is not saved for just a few special people. That's not just the priest who was there, or the rabbi, or many of the other teachers. Master came in and said to us, every one of you can attain this with effort, with being able to sit at the teacher's feet and doing the one thing needful. That was new. That was different. That was a reminder for us who were born in this extraordinary age of energy and of things happening very quickly and of computers and huge amounts of information and all those things. Master said, let's remember what Jesus said, which is, be still and know that I am. Then we have Swami Kriyananda, who studied with Master, and who came in and who said the same thing to us, who taught us in all of the different ways that we, by our very right, could really attain oneness with the divine, that all those ways that we feel that we're drawn out, what is it really that has us feel so busy in life? The first thing that happens is that we forget that God is the doer. As I was saying before, we actually feel that we're responsible for everything. The next thing is that we get drawn into the activity itself, and we get sidetracked by the making of the dinner. And the last thing that happens is this whole notion of nishkam karma, which means performing any activity without any thought of what will come to us because of it. We forget that God is acting through us. We forget that everything that we're doing in life, every relationship that we have, every chore that we go to do, that we're doing not just with God, but for God. There's a wonderful story that Swamiji told about a sadhu in India who was a very highly evolved teacher, actually. And one day he was trying to meditate, and he was being bothered by a crow that was cawing. And he said to himself, I just wish that crow would die. And the crow fell from the tree, dead. And he said, wow, I'm actually pretty powerful, aren't I? So then he had a vision of God. God came to him right in that moment and said to him, you know, you are powerful. You do have powers, but I'd like to introduce you to somebody who has even greater power. And God tells him to go and meet a woman in a neighboring town. So he goes and he finds this woman's house and he knocks on the door and he says to the woman, I need to talk to you. She says to him, I'll be out in a few minutes. And he's saying to himself, I'll be out in a few minutes. And he said to her, no, this is important. God sent me. I'm here. I need to talk with you. And she said, have patience, kind sir. I am not your crow. So he says to himself, okay, this woman clearly knows something. So he sits and he waits, and she comes out, and he said to her, what is your path? And she said, oh, she had said to him, I'm serving my husband, and I'll be out when I'm finished. That's when he got really irritated, and she responded, I'm not your crow. When she came out, he asked her, what is your path? How have you attained such wisdom? And she said, I've attained wisdom through serving my husband. That has been my sadhana. I have seen God in my husband, and all that I do for God. So he left her feeling that he had learned a great lesson, and he went back, and he sat down to meditate, and God came to him, and God said to him, I know you've learned a lesson, but I'd like you to learn more. And he said, there's another teacher who is even more highly evolved than that woman who I sent you to. So he gives him directions, and the man is walking, and he goes through the town, and he goes through the nice part of town. Then he goes through a little worse part of town. Then he's walking through town where people live that he would call untouchables. And he's saying, what is God doing here? Finally, he gets to the place, and he sees that this man is a butcher. This is not a very high calling in his mind, dealing with meat, touching dead meat. And he says to this man, what is your path? This man talks to him, lets him know that he has a great deal of wisdom also. And the man said, I've attained God by serving my parents. And the man thinks to himself, now I understand. It is not the people that we communicate with. It's not the job we do. It's really seeing God in every single thing that we do, in every person that we speak to. If we know we are always serving God, if every act that we perform it as if we're doing it for God. There's a wonderful phrase in the Bible. We don't hear it very often, but in a talk that I listened to that Swami gave not that long ago, Swamiji said this is one of the most important lines in the Bible. It says, two will be working in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. What does that mean? Two will be taken, one will be taken and one will be left. Taken means one will be shown God, the other will not. But what's so powerful about that story is that they're both doing the same exact job. They're both working in the field. And it shows us that it is not what we're doing. It doesn't matter what we're doing. The truth is, our outward jobs, behavior, whatever it is we do in the world, whether we're the finest brain surgeon or whether we're serving our husband dinner day after day, whether we're the best lawyer or professor around or whether we're the butcher. It has nothing to do with what we do. It has everything to do with the attitude with which we do it. It has everything to do with right attitude, with right-mindedness. It has everything to do with making our jobs holy, with changing our relationships so that we never see just our husband or our wife again, but rather everything we do is an offering to God, because of course everything is God. And then through Swamiji, through Master, through Swamiji, we have Ananda. And what is Ananda really? Ananda is a way of life that takes this conscious affirmation. We are one with God. We are part of the divine, and finds ways to weave it, many different ways, into our everyday life. We are on a path that teaches us all of what I just said. I was thinking yesterday that we're about to have a Rajasi Day on June 13th. And I was thinking about Rajasi because this is a custom all over Ananda, all over the world, I think, that we have a Rajasi Day. I think it started around for his birthday, that it would happen on his birthday. Why is that? Why do we have these work days? We can pile lists of things to do. Hopefully all of you will join us on June 13th. And you'll see we've been sitting around now for a while thinking of all the ways that we need to beautify the church, build a shed to hold some of our tools, all these different tasks that we have. But the reason we do it on Rajasi Day is because Rajasi, who was one of the most highly evolved disciples of Paramahansa Yogananda, worked consciously. He served consciously. He served as if he were doing it all for God, because he was. There's a wonderful story about Rajasi. He often stood next to Master, whatever Master was doing. When he was doing it one day at the end of service, Master would greet people, and one by one he would bless them. And a woman came up to Master, and before she could receive her blessing, she just started saying to Master, "My life is terrible, it's falling apart, I don't have work, I can't feed my children," with this line of people waiting to be blessed. And there was Rajasi standing right next to Master, in tune, totally in tune with Master. Master just gives him a subtle little look, and Rajasi takes a roll of bills out of his pocket, and he hands her one, and then in a little bit of time, he hands her another, and he just keeps handing this woman bills until Master just gives him the slightest nod, and then Rajasi puts the money away, and Master blesses the woman, and she leaves. Not a word spoken between them, just this deep attunement of serving God consciously and with deep awareness. That's who Rajasi was. That's why we do a work day in Rajasi's name, to remind us that whatever we're doing becomes a holy task if we treat it that way. That whoever we're looking at becomes a perfect reminder of God if we hold them that way. That this life is really about attaining oneness with the divine, about knowing true bliss. It's not about getting the dinner on the table. That's not what's most important. That everything that we do in life can become a part of what Swamiji called the divine romance. Everything can be that if we hold it that way. there's those last lines in a poem that Master wrote called God, God, God. I'm going to say them for you in 1 minute, but I want to say, last night when I was reading this reading, the two chants that we did before meditation today came to me. And I offer our musicians a little bit of an apology, I think. I very quickly just jotted them a note and said, hey, it just came to me as an inspiration. I want you to play these chants. And then I'm looking at all of them and realizing that they must have had to really hurry to practice them or maybe even learn them. So thank you. They were beautiful. But in one of those chants, the Ram Prasad chants, will that day come to me, Ma? Just the words, 1,000 Vedas do declare divine mothers everywhere. And every line in that song is just a reminder. When they were chanting it, I thought, if I had any more courage, I would just say, you know what? Let's forget everything that's supposed to happen now. Let's just chant that chant until we become it, because that is the one thing needful. That is what was in this reading. And that beautiful line of Jesus's, where he says, how will you live your life? With restless preoccupation or with peaceful absorbance? Those absorption, restless preoccupation or peaceful absorption. They're such beautiful lines. If we could listen to this chant, if we could hold that chant, if we could listen to one thing needful, peaceful absorption is the answer. It doesn't matter what we're doing. That has nothing to do with anything. When the time comes and we're going to leave our body, you look back at everything that we thought was so important, and it was in the moment. You know what came to me last night? I grew up at a time when we had those felt little skirts. I don't know if anybody in this room is as old as I am, but and on them somebody had sewn little dogs or cats or flowers. Isn't that just the sweetest thing in the world? I mean, rather than chains and whatever we're wearing these days. It was so adorable. But my mother and father went shopping for me once. I mean, and they bought me a little felt skirt with a cat on it. And I threw a temper tantrum because I wanted a poodle skirt. I think they were even called poodle skirts. And I didn't let up until they went and exchanged the cat skirt for a poodle skirt. It felt so important to me. I can think of so many other things in my life. They feel so important. And as we get older, they actually take on a little more importance, don't they? Whether your children are healthy or not, what college they're going to go to, what job you have. When the time comes and we're actually getting ready to leave, if we have even a moment to contemplate leaving, do they feel important? Did any of it really matter? I realized last night, this is why people say, in the end, the question that you will be asked is, did you love well enough? Because what that means is, did you see God over and over and over in everyone and in everything? That's what true love is. And it's never too late to start that. Never. Right now. Let's all remember everything in this world. Sri Ram Prasad said, divine mother everywhere stays. What a beautiful line. Everywhere. Not in some places, occasionally. Everywhere. It's always true. And then finally, to make as our prayer, last night I cut them out. Sai Ganesh, if I get lost, you remind me of these words of the final stanza of Yogananda's poem, God, God, God. It's such a beautiful poem, the whole poem. But the last line says, in waking, eating, working, dreaming, sleeping, serving, chanting, meditating, divinely loving. So let me do it again now that I think I have it. In waking, eating, working. No, I can't get this. This is ridiculous. Can you put him on the microphone for 1 minute? Just say those two lines. This is crazy.
In waking, eating, working, dreaming, sleeping, serving, meditating, chanting,
divinely loving, my soul will constantly hum, unheard by any, God, God, God. My soul will constantly hum in all of those activities. Master really covered the day from waking to sleeping and a lot of things in between. My soul will constantly hum, unheard by any, God, God, God.